This is TWiT.
Carl Bodie wrote an article saying, this is great news. More communities are building their own broadband. Why? Because of COVID? How is that happening?
Well, you know, everybody, most people don't like their regional telecom giant, whether it's, you know, Comcast or whoever it is, you know, and most people only have the choice.
It's a monopoly.
83 million Americans live under a broadband monopoly. You know, here in Seattle, which is, you know, Silicon Valley North, I have the choice of one provider, Comcast.
Isn't that terrible? It's awful. You know?
And this has been going on for 25 years, literally. We've thrown billions and billions and billions of dollars at this problem. And it just, so I think a lot of these local towns and cities have just gotten incredibly frustrated. So there's about 1,000 different communities that have, in the last decade or two, built their own broadband access that routinely winds up being cheaper, faster, more reliable. The money that the locals spend on this service goes back into the community. The people who work for these providers tend to live in the communities they serve. So unlike a lot of these regional monopolies, the money is staying there and they're more accountable to the locals. So
I'm surprised because I know that when Philadelphia tried this, that they were immediately sued and state legislatures across the country started passing bills prohibiting municipal broadband. But this is despite those bills.
Yeah, there's 17 states that currently have passed laws restricting towns and cities from getting into the broadband business or building their own broadband networks or expanding those networks. But I think COVID really showcased when you saw toddlers like sitting on the sidewalk outside of Taco
McDonald's.
Bell
to
try and get online for class. You know, this has always been a problem, but COVID really accelerated, you know, the awareness. So it really is driven some action.
Good. And so those 17 states, forget it.
It depends. Each state has a different variation. Sometimes it'll be an outright ban on building your own local network, and sometimes it'll be worded in a very convoluted way to make it as difficult as possible to raise funds or to expand, or you can't market in this zone, or you can only, if it's like, a lot of these networks are built on the back of the local power utility. And so what
Chattanooga did that,
same.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of the fastest and cheapest fiber providers in the nation.
They had gigabit.
But what a law will sometimes do is say you can't expand this network outside of the local utility footprint. You know, some of the laws will say something like that. And there's no real reason for it outside of the fact that the regional telecom monopolies, who literally ghostwrite most of these laws, just told the state representatives that they didn't want that to happen. And there's no, this stuff is super popular. It's bipartisan. There's no excuse for the failure that I've seen in the last 20 years.
The ideological argument is that, well, you wouldn't want government to compete with private industry.
Yeah, but the counter argument is that, you know, a lot of these companies have had 20 years to wire these areas and they don't want to because the return on their investment is low. But at the same time, they don't want anybody else building their own broadband networks because they might want to go back someday.
Yeah, we may someday. You know, yeah.
It's a very cake and eat it too kind of thing for these companies.
Oh, what a surprise. And,
I'm just thinking about when I ran for Congress, I got to know so much about local budgeting, like more than I ever would have thought. And I'd like here in Dedham, where, you know, a friend of the show, Paul Thoreau, used to live here too.
Right.
We canceled our trail this year, like a just walking trail, because COVID has destroyed our municipal budget. If you go over to poorer areas of Massachusetts, like Brockton, I can promise you the Brockton tax base is not, you know, gonna like go for a bunch of broadband development right now. So I'm for you. I'm with you in principle, but I'm also thinking about the people that need it most and thinking about towns like Whitman where they're like, hey, we're just going to have our library open for 3 days a week because we have no money. You know, we're going to have a 4 day a week police department. And, I'm thinking about like, is it really a feasible thing all through the United States? Like COVID is going to affect our local revenues for years.
Yeah, it's not like a silver bullet where you could just do this in every nation. And there's also like multiple varieties of different types of ISPs that are built out of this model. You know, some will be on the back of the local power utility that won't use taxpayer money at all. Some will be a private public partnership that, you know, just works with a local provider like Google Fiber or somebody to deploy to the area. So it's not all just tax-based driven models. I mean, there's a wide variety of models they can explore.
Here in this little town of Petaluma, about 60,000 people, there was a big initiative about 5 years ago to put in community Wi-Fi. Initially, Comcast was going to help, but then they bowed out. Then another provider was going to help. They bowed out. They put some stuff up, but it didn't work. It's gone. Mm. And I think it's just a hard thing to do. And there isn't a lot of support from the incumbents, of course. So you really have to have a leader, a civic leader who's going to really push it through.
Yeah, it's like any, you know, I mean, one of the things the telecom companies will do is they'll just say that these are automatic taxpayer boondoggles and you should never try it. But I mean, they're just like any other business plan, and they require a good leader and a sound plan. And you know, look at Chattanooga that built its own fiber network when Comcast refused to. They've been ranked consistently one of the most affordable, fastest internet providers in the country.
Well, the other good reason to do it is its evidence shows everywhere that incumbents were challenged by fiber, whether it was Google Fiber or others, that prices went down, that you know, speeds went up, and even in some communities where there's fiber up to this road, you could see the prices go up as soon as the fiber from the other company is not available. It's like no competition. Great, we're going to raise the prices.
It's and the thing that's frustrating is, like, you know, the approach to ban these entirely. We've spent literally about 25 years where the U.S., ever since we broke up Ma Bell, the U.S. telecom policy has basically been to do whatever the dominant regional monopolies want. I mean, with some exceptions occasionally. You know, like net neutrality was an effort to say, okay, maybe we should apply some very basic rules to these companies. And anytime anybody tries to do that, the companies get Congress to freak out. You know, trying something different will destroy the internet, you know. You know, that's basically their line.
But the good news is we live in this great country. We have the best internet in the world, right?
Incorrect. I'm afraid we rank pretty much mediocre on every metric that matters, whether you're looking at
the country that invented the internet, 14th place globally in speed.
Yeah. We're both 14th in fixed line broadband and 14th in wireless. And I think
at least we're consistent.
Yeah, we actually got a little worse in fixed line broadband, despite a lot of fiber.
So. Wow, we're slower than Canada, Italy, Saudi Arabia. The argument I hear when I mention this is, well, those countries have federally supported or federally owned, government owned internet companies or telecom companies. Is that always the case?
No, I don't think Canada has too many of those. I mean,
Canada's got the worst that's funny because Canada's got the worst telecom companies. Rogers,
yeah, they're very similar. They're very similar to us. They're regional monopolies that have been allowed to write laws for literally 20 years, and then people stand around with a silly look on their face, wondering why things are spotty and expensive and slow.
Okay,
well, I really support just anything. It seems logical to allow these little niche solutions to thrive, so that we can have any kind of creative solution.
Yes,
100%.
It's common sense.
And hey, at least we may only be 14th in terms of speed, but we are the least expensive, right, Carl?
No, pretty much one of the most expensive countries for both wireless and wired.
You're telling me we pay more and get less?
Yeah, and then there's that customer service, which is
I love them. I saw a survey once. People would rather have a heart attack than call Comcast customer service.
These companies are literally these companies are literally ranked worst in customer satisfaction and service than pretty much any industry in America. And when you think about the fact that that includes banks, that includes insurance, that includes airlines, I mean, that's a feat. And it's been pretty consistent. There's been some minor improvements from some of these companies in the last few years, but it's not great.
You could argue that maybe there's something flawed in our democracy, because actually it's not just broadband. It's also medical.
There's a
lot of areas where we should be number one.
Yeah.
Education.
When I spent a lot of time covering these companies, I would look at the way the success they had writing bills. And there's literally some of these companies effectively control state legislatures. They can get the bills passed. Any telecom laws that are passed are written by them, ghostwritten by them. And that's, you know, I've started learning that. And then like you said, you start looking around at healthcare and other industries, and it's pretty much the same.
I just thank goodness we're really strong on women's reproductive rights. Oh, no. Just forget it.
I'm going to start drinking on this show.
We're going to get upbeat. Let's take a deep break.
I really do think it's a positive change that these communities are taking.
No, I agree. I've been a longtime supporter of municipal broadband. I think it's brilliant. I think it's right. We really ought to do it, and every community ought to look at it. In fact, a good friend of mine was an activist, would go around helping cities set this up. I really think it's the right thing to do, and it helps everybody. It's good for the economy, and frankly, it helps these incumbents because they're going to do a better job because they're getting competition finally. They can't just rest on their laurels or whatever.
Yeah,
now that all of our jobs are on Zoom, I've taken more Zoom meetings.
Yeah, we need
in
it.
The last month than my entire
is
life.
Starlink, going to be the solution for this? Is it going to?
I think anything that applies a little pressure on these companies are good. The problem with Starlink is going to be a capacity one. When you figure there's somewhere between 20 and 40 million Americans that have no access and another 83 million that have a monopoly, that live under a monopoly. And Starlink, I think, with their initial load of satellites is going to reach about 500 to 800,000 customers.
They did just ask the FCC for approval for a total of 30,000 satellites.
Yeah, and with a maximum capacity of 42,000 satellites, they should be able to reach about 6 million potential customers.
So it's still very limited. I didn't realize it was going to be that limited.
I mean, come on, y'all. You read the Verge piece on this, like looking at Starlink and what the promises are and what the reality is. It's not good. Yeah. It's terrible.
Neela Patel writes, broadband dreams fall to earth.
Yeah. If you love reading mean reviews of
Neela's
products, and I do, please read this. It is so, it's a disaster.
Yeah, he actually ordered it and talks about his experience. After reading this, I wanted to try it. So I'm on the waiting list for $500 in satellite equipment and $100 a month in service. But I just want to, at some point, I want to be able to just put it on my back and travel and stuff, but I don't know.
I mean, if your only option is satellite broadband or
this
nothing
is better
at all,
than anything.
It's going to be a big
better than Exceed, better than Wild Blue, but it's the best.
The problem is there's limited slots, and I think Elon Musk fans are going to gobble up a lot of those to put satellites on their cyber trucks and stuff.
The sad thing is, as ridiculous as that sentence sounds, it's
true.
Actually, is pretty believable and is true.
I think it is.
Because that was my plan. That was going to be my sixth car. It was a Cybertruck. Oh,
yeah, with flags, it'd be nice.
What's going on with the Cybertruck? I feel like I haven't heard anything.
I think they changed the design a little bit. He backed down a little bit on the design. I think
they delayed again. Yeah. I thought I remember reading another delay.
Yeah.
The other problem with Starlink is that, the affordability thing, like $100 a month plus a $500 charge is not exactly appealing to somebody who's struggling in rural Wisconsin. They need service tiers at around $40 a month. Yeah. So it's not really helping those people. I mean, if they can afford it, maybe. And then there's the debate about the light pollution in the night sky, which is a whole other layer that.
As Neela Patel says, people so desperate for good internet that they say F telescopes.
<That's right.
laughs> Screw them. Yeah.